Today on the 21st Show, starting next year, when bigger Illinois employers post job opportunities, they'll also have to disclose salary ranges and benefits. Supporters of the law hope the change will highlight the fact that women, on average, still earn less money than men. Today we're going to dive into that wage gap, and others, across racial and ethnic differences as well. And we'll talk through some of the counterarguments, including those of people who think the very idea of income inequality has been greatly exaggerated. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. Airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WNIJ in Rockford DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, the news. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. How much are you paid for the work you do? For a lot of people in the workforce, that is still a taboo discussion. But the answers to that question can shine a light on some persistent inequalities. The Equal Pay Act of 1963 prohibits pay discrimination on the basis of sex, but on the 50th anniversary of its signing, more than a decade ago now, there were still pretty significant disparities, something to which former President Barack Obama called attention.
Our journey to equality is not complete until our wives, our mothers, our daughters can earn a living equal to their efforts. The day that the bill was signed into law, women earned 59 cents for every dollar a man earned, on average. Today, it's about 77 cents. So it was 59, now it's 77 cents. It's even less, by the way, if you're an African American or a Latina. So I guess that's progress, but does anybody here think that's good enough?
The numbers have changed a little since then, but the differences are still there. So Illinois lawmakers have brought that discussion out into the open. Starting next month, many employers in the state will be required to include certain information on their job postings, namely what the job will pay and what benefits it includes. What makes the wage gap the issue that it is? How much of this is systemic as opposed to the results of free choices, as some would argue? And is this even something that's government's problem to solve? Today we're going to try to put all of that into perspective for the hour. With us for that is Wenchen Wang, Industry Assistant Professor of Business Economics in the Stuart School of Business at the Illinois Institute of Technology. Before that, she was a postdoctoral research associate at the School of Labor and Employment Relations at the University of Illinois. And in that capacity, she wrote a report about the state of wage gaps across the state. That research came out earlier this year as part of the school's Project for Middle Class Renewal. Wenchen Wang, thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Sharmeli Majmudar is Executive Vice President of Policy, Programs, and Research for Women Employed, which advocates for equity for women in the workforce. Sharmeli, welcome to you as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
Araceli Esparza is the founder of a collective called Midwest Mujeres. That's Spanish for Midwest Women. Her group is focused on mentorship for multicultural women entrepreneurs, particularly Latinas and Black women. Araceli, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And we also have a business owner with us. Lily Cook owns Oasis Skin and Wellness Center in Murfreesboro and is a member of the Black Chamber of Commerce of Southern Illinois. Lily, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
I do want to note as we go on, we did invite a scholar from the Cato Institute who's written an entire book arguing that the way we think of wage inequality is kind of wrong. The Institute did not respond to our request. We'll plan to reckon with a few of his arguments, though, as we go along. For now, I want to invite you to join us on the program today. 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Wenchen Wang, I'm going to begin with you. At the highest levels, what does your work show about the state of the wage gap in Illinois?
Yeah, so I think we've all heard President Obama's numbers. So I'll share with you some of the numbers in my report. So my report used annual data from the US Census and looking at full-time workers in the most recent years from 2018 to 2022. And in this report, I look at both gender and racial wage gaps. So let's start with the gender wage gaps. So for every dollar a man earns in Illinois, women just earn 83 cents. So that's a little bit better than the 77 cents we have heard before. And when we break the wage gap down by race and ethnicity, we see Black workers earn 78 cents for every dollar a white worker earns. And the most significant wage gap is actually between Hispanics and non-Hispanics at 71 cents on the dollar. And by looking at these separate gender and racial categories, it kind of makes you think about the experiences for people who fall into multiple categories. If being a woman or being Hispanic individually puts you at a disadvantage, what would happen when those factors combine together? So my report also digs into the intersectionality of these issues. So for every $1 an average white male makes in Illinois, an average Hispanic female only makes 60 cents. So that's more a wider gap compared with the racial and gender wage gaps alone. An average Black female earns around 69 cents, so a little bit better compared with the Hispanic female. An Asian female experiences the smallest wage gap and make around 94 cents for every $1 a white male earns. So basically, the overall conclusion is that different kinds of wage gaps are still prevalent in Illinois. And I think this is a very important issue because it isn't just about numbers, it's about real people's lives, families, communities, and even the whole states of economies impacted. So I'm really glad to be included in this conversation today.
So you talked about numbers across sort of demographic differences there. What about within or say the difference between like higher paying jobs and lower paying jobs? There's a gap that changes there as well, right?
Yeah, so I also look at both gender and racial wage gaps across the wage distribution. And the finding is that the wage gap is the smallest at the lower wage distribution, at, for example, at those lower paying jobs and industries such as restaurant workers and service industries. And the wage gap is the largest at the higher paying jobs, at the 90th wage percentile. So basically, this makes sense, right? Because if you think about the wage gap at the lower wage distribution, there's a wage floor, there's the minimum wage that's restricting those kind of wage gap between different gender and different race. However, there's not a wage ceiling at the higher paying jobs. And for those higher paying jobs, let's use tech industry as an example. And also let's think about those core tech occupational ranks, such as executives, managers, and professionals. So for those occupations and industries, it's predominantly male and white. So basically, women and people of color are underrepresented in those high paying jobs, and they also earn a wage gap. So that's a basic finding from that aspect from my report.
So, Lily Cook, I want to bring you into the conversation now. So, as you've been listening to those numbers, we heard the numbers from President Obama a decade ago, a little while ago. How are you thinking about that? How are you thinking about the differences across different groups and between the genders?
I am very aware, and I love what Wenchen said about it being a affecting people's real lives because I see it every day as a business owner. We try very hard to be very clear and transparent in our pay scale and providing a very clear path for my employees to know exactly how they can earn more because it is a yin and yang situation for especially a small business. So I'm very aware of the challenges that come to that. I always say in my business, I never want one of my employees to be struggling, but there are limitations, obviously. So as an employer, I think it is paramount to be aware that it is a real issue, a real concern. I always tell my teammates also, we are a spa, so it's a service that can be seen as a luxury to some. And so if we personally are feeling the effects of the economy and things of that nature, so is our clientele. So I have to be very, very strategic in understanding what my employees, what my teammates are being impacted by, and what I can do to assist them. And sometimes that is not wage increases. Sometimes that X is a conversation about other resources and other ways that we can support them. And so specifically in the intersectionality between men, women, and different races and just diaspora of people, I am very conscious of how that makeup affects people's day-to-day lives. And being aware of that empowers me as a business owner to make more strategic decisions. Maybe that is bringing those resources into the practice on a monthly basis to allow employees to learn more for themselves, or giving them an opportunity to talk to financial advisors, things of that nature that they may not be able to afford on their own. Giving them opportunities to learn more about other financial things that are going to assist them long term in their life.
And we can get into some of that, some of those ideas a little as we go on in the conversation. Sharmili Majmudar, I want to bring you in now from the group Women Employed. We've been talking about the what. What is the why? What is your best understanding of why, or maybe the multiple reasons why these wage gaps have persisted over time?
I think you're absolutely right that it's multiple reasons. Because even looking at what Wenchen was sharing about intersections between race and gender, the intersections become, and the gap becomes even larger when you add in age, for example, or whether you add in motherhood. And the fact that the gap increases when you add some of these other factors in, I think, is an indication of the multiple factors that come together to create the gender wage gap. Overall, I think there are a few clear reasons that we continue to have a gender wage gap. First of all, women are vastly overrepresented in low-wage jobs and underrepresented in higher-wage ones, what we call occupational segregation. In addition to that, women still face gender and racial discrimination, also ageism, the motherhood penalty, etc. And to build on the motherhood penalty, just societally, women continue to bear the brunt of home and caregiving responsibilities, and those responsibilities are generally unpaid. And so as a result, they have to balance their caregiving responsibilities with work, which impacts their earnings and retirement savings. And then they also experience discrimination based on those caregiving responsibilities, which thankfully Illinois just passed a law that prohibits discrimination based on caregiving responsibilities. But it's still something that plays out in the workplace, whether it's how someone is treated in the workplace or whether it forces a narrowing of what opportunities are available to them because they have these multiple responsibilities that they are trying to accomplish. And this is just, the larger picture around occupational segregation is also that some of these higher wage industries are not necessarily as welcoming to bringing in a diversity of workforce either. And so you see industries like construction, for example, that has really struggled with ensuring that it is free of harassment, for example, and truly inclusive of what the workforce would need to look like in order to move us further towards gender equity as it relates to wages.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting point. Araceli Esparza, but we need to take a break in a few minutes here, but I want to ask you, so you the work you do with Midwest Mujeres, you focus on entrepreneurial, multicultural women. Who are your members? Are they clustered in certain industries? Tell me about them.
So they are, They're clustered in different industries. A lot of them are, it's a response, right? It's a response to the low wages that they're facing and overrepresentation in restaurant and hospitality industries. So they go ahead and start their own restaurant and hospitality industries, such as cleaning, such as management. They explore things that they never had before, and we offer them that support to explore that, to explore this, but also understanding that a lot of them have to do this on the corners of their lives, meaning they're already working full time and full time motherhood and parenting, as all of the guests have spoken about. What I wanted to also bring to attention is that Latinas at entry level, we only make up over a little bit over 9% of the population, but just under 5% of entry level workers. The scarcity of Latinas at the entry level makes them the most unrepresented of any group at beginning of their careers. And that statistic to me scares me, but it also reflects how many of us go to college, come out of college, and we're still way behind because there's no mentorship. There's no one there to cultivate an understanding of, like, say, salary negotiations. And that's what we try to do at our in our organization is make us bolder and louder and asking for this and demanding higher salary wages or the contracts. If you are an entrepreneur, how to pitch for your contracts. So I'm constantly coaching women on how to utilize their lived experiences as equity, value, and impact for, be it for an entry level position as a career woman or be it as an entrepreneur and gathering more clients. So that is kind of how we've squirreled around the wage equity gap that we have going on in the United States. And so far, it has made us, possibly made Latinos this year. And I quote, the statistic recently came out from Forbes, actually, that Latino-owned businesses are driving $1.4 trillion growth and shaping the future of the U.S. economy. And that's impressive. That just came out in April at Forbes as well. Thank you.
All right, we're gonna take a break. We are gonna continue this conversation for the rest of our program today. We'd love to hear from you at 800-222-9455. Maybe you have experienced the wage gap in your life, as we've been talking about. We'd love to hear your story if you're willing to share it. 800-222-9455 is the number to join us today. We're gonna continue this conversation after a short break. You're listening to the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and today our topic is the lasting wage gap. Women making less than men, especially women of color and women of other marginalized groups. We're talking about how this has changed over time and what some of the causes are of this gap. We're also talking about what's being done about it and to what extent this is something that government can or should try to solve. That also includes a wage transparency law for job postings that is going to be taking effect here in Illinois at the start of the new year. We heard a lot from you in our texting group about this, which you can join by sending the word talk to 217-803-0730. Barb in Springfield wrote, "The pay gap for women and black workers has deep roots in history. Progress has been made to minimize this discrepancy, but certainly not eliminate it. Posting salary ranges may not be terribly helpful, except that it will assist in making the hiring process more transparent and therefore more fair." We also heard from Lloyd in Danville, who says, "Greed explains the gap. People like me should reduce their spending to send a message to the people who are behind the gap. As an example, I don't eat out anymore unless it's a minority-owned business. Politicians are too close to big business," Lloyd says. "I need nothing from food chains who hold workers hostages." We're talking about this with Sharmili Majmudar of Women Employed, Aracelia Sparza with the Midwest Mujeres Collective, Lily Cook, a business owner in Murfreesboro and a member of the Black Chamber of Commerce of Southern Illinois, and Wenchen Wang, assistant professor at Illinois Tech and the author of a report earlier this year about the state of the wage gap in Illinois. You can join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Sharmili, I want to back up for a moment here because there are people out there who disagree with the very premise of the wage gap, or at least what's, you know, that it's a problem government can do something about, for example. There was a commentary in the Wall Street Journal earlier this year by a man named John F. Early, who's with the Cato Institute, and Phil Gramm, former Republican senator from Texas. I should add, we reached out to the Cato Institute to invite him on the show, didn't hear back. They don't dispute the numbers we use or the existence of the wage gap, but they write, quote, "The pay gap is the natural economic result of choices men and women make, including how much or how little to work and which occupations to enter." They go on, "The claim that the gap reflects discrimination assumes that employers would pass up the chance to hire women at 84% of what they pay a man with the same training, skills, and experience to do the same job." So, Sharmilee, to John and Phil's points, how do you respond to that?
I think we have to really think about what we're saying when we say people have choices. So as I was talking about before, the fact that our society is set up to have women carry the lion's share of home and caregiving responsibilities, and that then in turn creates pressures for them in terms of what kinds of jobs they can have, the kind of flexibility that they need, those kinds of things. Those could be called choices. But again, we look at education, for example. Even across fields as broad as electrical engineering, to computer science, to elementary education, to social work, men's wages exceed women's wages. So even when women are choosing fields of study that are those higher income fields of study, they're still experiencing a wage gap. I think that you have to think about choices, but we also have to think about these disparities as being driven by how our society is set up, and the fact that there are particular expectations of women that do not exist for men. When we talk about motherhood penalty, the flip side of that is a fatherhood bonus. Fathers get paid more for every child that they have. Women get paid less. So there is more to interrogate here than being as simplistic as talking about it being choices. Also, we have to think about this as a progression. Because as we discussed before, when Wenchen was talking about higher levels of industry, so white collar jobs versus blue collar entry level jobs, when you're talking about this, the floor of wages, there isn't going to be as much disparity, but the floor is often where people start. So if you have disparities in what opportunities people are given, promotions, additional opportunities to advance, then you start seeing those disparities increase. And then you have a C-suite that often looks very, very different than what that entry level looks like. So you have to think about those things as well. I do think transparency is a big piece of that. I know, you know, we talked a little bit about salary negotiation. And even within salary negotiation, I think one of the things I want to point out is that a lot of what people talk about with the gender wage gap is like, oh, well, women just need to negotiate more. But women are perceived differently when they negotiate than men are. And so simply saying that women just need to negotiate is not really taking into account the actual lived experience of women in the workplace. So like Harvard and Carnegie Mellon researchers found that women are penalized in contrast to men when they try to negotiate compensation because they are seen as not nice and overly demanding, which is absolutely connected to expectations of women that we don't have of men.
Wenchen Wang, I want to ask you about this as well, because you're an economist, right? So, I mean, this idea, and there's one other quote I'm going to read from this article that we've been talking about from John F. Early. It was published by the Cato Institute and the Wall Street Journal. He said, since labor costs make up a significant share of total business costs, not only would employers have a strong incentive to hire women, but discriminators would have a hard time staying in business. Market forces penalize discrimination and reward inclusion. I wonder what you think of that.
So I do think that I agree with a lot of Sharmili's points, that I do think that even if, so in theory, that labor costs are cheaper if you hire women because the wage gap exists, but whether the organization will choose to hire those people, will choose to hire women of color. So basically, in my report, I use some methods to try to decompose the wage gap, to see whether some of the wage gap is based on explained factors, such as education, experience, age, number of children, and things like that, and whether any components of those wage gap can be ascribed to unexplained factors, such as discriminations. So basically what I find is that it shows that basically, even when women in Illinois on average have more favorable socioeconomic characteristics such as education and experience compared with their male counterparts, they still earn less in comparable roles. This is to say that even when women are objectively more qualified on paper, there's still a wage gap. And based on what I find using the wage distribution and based on the statistics, for example, in the tech industry, it's still predominantly male and white. So basically, it's a choice within the employers whether they would willing to lower those labor costs by hiring women. So basically, I think there's something deeper going on here, something beyond just the types of jobs people choose on their level of education. It points toward those discrimination as contributing to these disparities. And those kind of bias moving into the system, even if it's not intentional or overt, but it still has this measurable impact on employers' hiring and compensation decisions. And another thing I agree with Sharmili's point is that childcare responsibility is one thing that women shoulder like very heavily. So basically the data in my report clearly shows that as the number of children in a household increases, the wage gap for women in Illinois widens. So basically the financial penalty for women is huge, while men doesn't have to shoulder those kind of responsibility or those kind of penalties. So I do think that theoretically, like using economic theory, that employers might want to hire women because or people of color because of those lower costs, but woven in the system, discrimination might prevent them doing that.
You know, is there a term for that, like that fallacy that economists sometimes have of like the perfectly rational decision maker on, you know, yes, maybe it lowers the bottom line, but the person doing the hiring decision at the software company might just want mm-hmm. someone that they feel like they can talk about Star Wars with or something and not necessarily look at the precise cost figures.
Yeah, exactly. And women, I think there's like a perceived like conception about women. So for example, I think Sharmili talked about if they argue for better compensation or better benefits, they will be considered as more demanding. So for example, in the tech industry, women are considered less smart, I would say, than men. So basically, I do think the discrimination, especially what I find in my report, proves that point, that especially discrimination affects the wage and gender racial gap. And that's a choice within the employer, whether they would want to hire women of color or whether they would want to economically save the costs.
Lily Cook, I want to come back to you. So you're a business owner in Murfreesboro. You haven't always been an entrepreneur, though, right? So I wonder how things change when you are working for yourself versus working for someone else in terms of this wage gap idea.
In terms of the wage gap idea in regards to working for someone else and working for oneself, you do get a little bit more, you get the ability to, I guess, really in take on those choices. In regards to, you can control a little bit more of your own expenses and have more control over what you how and how you spend and everything like that, but there is still this disparity in from bank loans and things of that nature, things that help you grow your business. You are constantly kind of having to prove and show up in a different way than a male counterpart. So there's still that that struggle that's there. It's just in a different way and at a different level. So Araceli kind of spoke to that and being able to really shake up those societal norms and position yourself, knowing how to position yourself as an expert. And it takes time to really prove yourself when you are a female business owner.
Araceli Esparza with Midwest Mujeres. I want to ask you about another aspect of the effect of this wage gap. It compounds over time, right? When people are earning less every year, by the time they reach the end of their careers, we're talking about a significant difference in accumulated wealth for people. And how does that not only affect the individuals, but can you speak to how that compounds through, or doesn't compound maybe, through communities?
I think we lose our stories of resilience and sacrifice. It's assumed that you see, it's kind of like the iceberg effect. We only see people on the top. We never see how long it took them to get there. And then the ones that didn't make it there, we don't see them at all. So their stories go untold. The struggles that they've gone through are the never coulds. So when you do see women of color in success, it's very small. I mean, if we talk about C-suite, as Wing and Majorda have talked about, Latinas only represent less than 1%. I knew, just for instance, I knew a podcast that was interviewing Latinas and C-suite. Within a year, they were ran out of guests. Like they couldn't find any more Latinas in C-suite positions for guests on their podcast. Now, if we talk about what happens to a whole community, the dreams, the inspiration, the innovation, if we don't have people telling us that you can be something other than a leader in the restaurant and hospitality industry, of which I have tons of respect, but we are overpopulated in those areas. We have as many taco shops now than we do, as we do burger shops. That's a good thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying that's just not all of our things. We are experts in so many other ways and innovators in so many other ways. And because we don't see those showing up, then we have even less choices for those young girls who are growing up and wanting to see college careers. My daughter, for instance, she wants to be an oboist. And let me tell you how many Latina oboists there are in the nation. And especially in a situation like Wisconsin, which is like 95% white. And then even seeing that in the musical industry, classical musical industry. And then we get now, so as we get more niche in our wants and dreams, we see so little representation of women being successful financially that it might be discouraging to Latinas to even, and or Black women, to young Black girls, to even dream a new dream of themselves. And we're missing out on that innovation. And then consequently, we see that on a global scale, that in other countries, women are being so empowered that they're scaling completely their businesses, their reach, et cetera. And globally, it's gonna hurt us. So when we're talking about choices, I don't think it's the choices of the women of when we go in there. We also don't see the representation of our choices.
All right, we're going to need to take another break here on the program. When we come back, we're going to pivot to talking about some potential solutions to this. One small step that Illinois government is trying is requiring certain size businesses to include salary ranges and benefits with every new job posting. We're going to talk about that and some of the other ideas that people have on this when we come back. Let me remind you can join us today on the program by calling 800-222-9455. What do you think explains the gender wage gap? Do you think a new law, this new law we're going to be talking about requiring salary ranges be included on job postings, will make a difference? And what else should government or businesses be doing when it comes to closing the pay gap? 800-222-9455. We're going to have more with Sharmeel Majmudar of Women Employed, Araceli Esparza with the Midwest Mujeres Collective, Lily Cook, a business owner in Murfreesboro and member of the Black Chamber of Commerce of Southern Illinois, and Wenchen Wang, assistant professor at Illinois Tech, and the author of a report earlier this year about the state of the wage gap in Illinois. More to come after a short break here on The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. If you're just joining us, we are talking about the lasting wage gap, particularly as it relates to gender, but also gender and race and gender and ethnicity and other aspects of this persistent wage gap that has narrowed in recent years, but still exists and exists in a bigger way or a smaller way, depending on how you fit into those demographics we've been talking about. My guests for this are Araceli Esparza, founder of the Midwest Mujeres Collective, Lily Cook, who is a business owner of the Oasis Skin and Wellness Center in Murfreesboro, also a member of the Black Chamber of Commerce of Southern Illinois, Sharmeli Majmudar, who is with the group Women Employed, and Wenchen Wang, who is on the faculty at the Illinois Institute of Technology. Again, if you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Less than 14 minutes left in the program today. It's time is flying by and there's so much more to talk about. So I don't know if we can try and be a little briefer because there are so many things that people have proposed out there. And I want to sort of dig into some of these. Sharmeli, I'm going to begin with you. Can we just talk a little bit about this wage transparency law? Can you remind us who it affects and what it's meant to do?
Yes, we're so excited about this. The salary transparency law is going to go into effect on January 1st, and it will require businesses in Illinois with 15 or more employees to publicly post the wage or salary range and description of benefits offered for a job. And that also includes any other compensation that might be part of the job. So, bonuses or commission or those kinds of things. And it also requires that employers provide employees their current wage or salary range along with a general description of benefits upon that employee's hiring, promotion, transfer upon the employee's request. The whole point of salary transparency is to provide information, because we know that knowledge is power, to promote trust. A SHRM study found that 73% of employees are more likely to trust their organization if they're transparent about their salary ranges. It ensures fairness so that employers can proactively review and evaluate their compensation practices. It ensures competitive talent because publishing pay ranges attracts talent, and conversely, not providing that information actually turns job applicants off. And we see that particularly with younger workers. So as we're thinking about younger generations of workers, it's efficient. This totally makes sense, right? It streamlines pay negotiations later. It saves time, resources, and effort on both sides. And it's proven to work in terms of helping to close the gender and racial wage gaps.
Araceli, I mentioned at the start of the show, there's still this stigma that exists about talking about money. Make a case for getting over our discomfort and talking more openly about this.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing because that's my annual show is I Want Money. Yo quiero dinero. Exactly. It brings a smile to all of us, though. Look how it broke it all up for us, right? I'll never forget when I gave this flyer out to this local Mexican man, and he started laughing, too. And he was this entrepreneur, a cook. You know, he just started his new restaurant, and he started smiling. And that smile, that encouragement, he's like, you know what? I want money, too. Yo quiero dinero también. And it was that ownership. that freedom. And we say it out loud. And the more that we say we want money, we want to talk about money, then this patriarchy, the systems, this discrimination, poof, it's lost its power. It's lost its power. So pushing back on that article that you keep on quoting about these guys who are like, yeah, it's all about choice. And like, it's the women choose this. And like, we want low paying jobs. I'm like, no, we don't. We survive and overcome them every single day because we're waiting. So in my organization, we are speaking out and no longer afraid of these systems anymore. And that's why we say it with joy, with glee. Like, yeah, we're here to talk about money and we're going to take our fair share and we're going to do great things with it. Instead of it being the scarcity in this whole like pin us against each other, because Latina and Black women have been pinned against each other for the last 50 years. And they're trying to still continue to do that in the C-suite level. And we're going to see that in you see that in entrepreneurship, social services, even receiving services. And that was my background for many years. And sometimes when I would, you know, give services to Latina undocumented folks or monolingual Spanish women, the Black women would patch back and they're like, look, she gets two people, one to translate and one to serve. And I only get one person. And that's when I started realizing that it was also an equity of like providing services and this perception of it and how we have to like dismantle some of those perceptions internally first. And that's why it's a mission of mine to make it, you know, joyful, to make this a joyful journey. But I'm so glad for the government to lead that journey, especially in Illinois with this no transparency. Wow. Congrats. I mean, many props to Illinois for taking the lead on this in the Midwest. I hope that the rest of the states recognize this because some of these women are getting hired and they have no idea how they're going to get paid. And I ask them like, or even entrepreneurs, they're like, well, we got into a business deal and they're like a month in and providing free services, sometimes free without any money exchange upfront. So there's been so much built in this country in the last 50 years on free labor of women of color. And we do it with joy, especially in the entrepreneurship area. We do it with joy. We're thinking it's going to come back to us, that there's this unsaid reciprocity. And I'm sorry if there was not underwriting in contract. And a lot of times that's what I'm educating Latina and Black entrepreneurs. If it's not in writing, it doesn't happen. And that's a language too that we're learning. So as you all are learning what yo quiero dinero means, we're also learning what it means to want to have money and to learn to ask for it with contracts, with agreements, with like a society built on reciprocity. Yeah.
Lily, what do you think when you hear that, right? People maybe they're afraid to negotiate, they're afraid to ask for it in writing. How do you react to that?
So first, I 100% echo Charmilly and Araceli. And as a business owner, I think it's really important to encourage your employees, your staff to understand your business plan, your business structure on how they can earn. So transparency is 100% important, not only to attract the right employees, but to keep them as well. When they see a path to success, they're going to stay. They're going to want to work with you, work towards you. And I think changing the perspective of employer-employee relationship from this combative, like Araceli was saying, like you take what you get kind of situation, really, for me, is incredibly important. I want teammates to understand, like, we succeed together, and providing that path is a part of that. I also want to kind of echo, I see this already a lot happening in the younger generation as I am hiring younger millennials or starting to see Gen Z enter the workforce. That perception of negotiation, that perception of here's what I am willing to, you know, trade with you, it's already starting. So I really think as we empower them, empower others to confidently talk about money and not let it be this taboo thing, it's only going to continue to shift. So I'm really actually very excited to see where the youngsters take us.
Wenchen Wang, I want to ask you a question we got from a listener, Paul in Urbana, about this topic, which he wonders that in the last 20 years, right, we've seen these gains that women have made, but he's read that it's, in his view, it's, or I should say something he's read, is that it's actually a result of sort of, or part of the answer, is that that has happened because men's earning power has been eroded and that really everybody needs a raise at this point. I wonder what you make of that, if you've seen that in your data as well.
So I think that, I think my report mainly looks at the gaps between different gender and different racial groups. I think for the whole economy, if we're talking about everybody needs a raise, that's another story. That's whether the whole economy will support every worker in this economy to have a raise. But I do think that there are some industries, like what we talked about, like those industries that have higher occupational segregation effect, like the tech industry, like the white collar industries. In that kind of industries, I think we should focus on, you know, getting women into those industries, because women and people of color are underrepresented and the wage gap is very large. But in those other industries, for example, like the blue collar industries, the restaurant workers, the service industries, the hospitality industries, I do think that because the wage floor is there to protect the workers, and maybe those wage floors needs to be improved to improve the well-being of those blue-collar worker situation. So I think it really depends on different type of industries and different types of occupations. And in terms of the wage transparency laws, I think I resonate with all the others' opinions, but I think another type of observation I have found in the Department of Labor's website is that I think there's another type of empowerment lies within for those wage transparency law. So in that law, there's nothing to mandate any employer to actually pay that wage. So for example, if in the job posting, the wage is from 90,000 to 120,000. There's not a law in place to require the employer that they have to pay that salary. So basically the employers the employers can pay anything below or above that range. And I think the empowerment lies within the fact that, for example, if the employer pays below the range to those applicants, then the applicants knows that, oh, I might be lowballed. I might be lowballed because the required skill and education experience, the reasonable expectation is within this range, but you're paying me below this range. So it empowers the employees to actually look into those kind of discrimination, to actually file those complaints with the Illinois Department of Labor. And the current employees, if they see the job posting for the same kind of classification or occupation, they can also see, oh, I'm being low paid, I'm being paid under this range, and they can also file those complaints. So that's another type of empowerment for employees and job applicants lies within the wage transparency law.
Sharmili, just about a minute left in our time together. Where do you see the ultimate solutions to this coming from? Does government need to do more? Do businesses need to be pressured? How does this eventually get to parity?
I mean, I think it has to take all of us, right? This is a systemic issue and a societal issue. And so there are pieces that need to move in a lot of different ways. I think one thing is knowledge is power, as we were saying before, but shared knowledge is transformational. So really having people actually talk about this, yo quiero dinero too. And so really making sure people know what their rights are and are talking to each other about what their rights are as well. We're also fighting for things to address the caregiving issue, like paid family and medical leave. In Illinois, we need transformational investments in the care infrastructure. We need to give individuals the opportunity to achieve their potential overall, which is what diversity, equity, and inclusion is all about. And then ultimately, flexibility. Like, I really appreciate what Lily was saying as a business owner, listening, learning, but also offering, right, strategic solutions for her staff. That acknowledge that people have needs, that we are not cookie cutter, that our workforce and our workplaces are not 1950s, but you know, we're in the 2020s and we need to update accordingly. So I think it takes all of us in doing that. And this conversation is a piece of that. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And thanks, Sharmili Majmudar, Wenchen Wang, Araceli Esparza, and Lily Cook. Thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st Show. That is all the time we have for our program today. Coming up tomorrow on the show, it's Friday. That means our week in review. We'll be recapping, actually, not just the week, but the year that was in Illinois state government and politics. Plus, as we approach the holidays, we'll talk about the importance of found family, especially for people who are LGBTQ and might be estranged from blood relations. We appreciate hearing from you about our programs and your suggestions for future guests or topics. Email us. The address is talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. You can find that address and every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is produced by Anna Casey, Christine Hatfield, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Colson Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.